Okay, it's 8:30, so we can get started. I know I always like to. I've known Rav Aviyat since he was about 18 inches tall, maybe a little taller. He was about 3 when you first came to Toronto. Yeah. Okay. Wow. So he was 3, and of course, as I always mention, his father, Rav Binyamin Tabor, really a great Talmid Chacham, who was our Rosh Yeshiva. The 4 years that he spent in Toronto were marked 4 years in high school, and that's what my sister's talking about, going to Yeshurim, and then he taught for many years in Yeshivat Har Etzion. And I noticed that Rav Aviad's book, The State of Halakha, which I show with it just came out this year, published by Koren, about halakhic issues about the establishment of the State of Israel, going through the history of the State of Israel through halakhic prism, is a very fascinating book. And he gave actually a series on it. I see it is dedicated. I see that the Schwartz is from Toronto, dedicated in honor of your father. So anyways, but Rav Tabor is, as you were alluding to, is broadcasting from Camp Stone. He lives in Elon Shvut, so we wouldn't ask him to get up at 3:30 in the morning. But since he's in Camp Stone, and he goes every year, serves as one of the rabbis in Camp Stone, so it's a pleasure. He teaches at Shivat Eretz HaTzvi, and he learned in Har Etzion and Or Etzion, and was served as a rabbi in England, I believe, for a while. And anyways, it's always a pleasure to have him. So
Thank
from
you.
Camp Stone, and if his voice is hoarse, that's because he's in camp, and you're supposed to lose your voice in camp. Okay, Vakasha.
Shalom, everyone. Erev Tov. Hi. Thank you very much, Rabbi Kelman. And I apologize for my voice. I'm like everyone else here. My throat is a bit not so well, not so good. Okay. So this week's parsha, Parshat Va'etchanan, and Parshat Va'etchanan is the second parsha of Sefer Devarim. Before we go into the parsha itself, I would like to talk a little about the idea of Sefer Devarim and how Beit Hanan fits into Sefer Devarim. Sefer Devarim receives a nickname by Chazal, Mishneh Torah, the supplement of the Torah, the replica of the Torah. Many people discuss and try to explain what the meaning of this idea, Mishneh Torah. And this is not my topic today, but I will just say quite quickly that Mishneh Torah, Sefer Devarim, means that it is a book which adds, summarizes, and gives interpretation to the events that took place throughout the Chumash. It is Moshe's drasha, sermon, which he's giving to Bnei Israel as they're entering Eretz Israel. And in this drasha, in this sermon, he will choose certain events that he wishes to highlight and give over musar, rebuke, to the people of Israel as they're about to enter Israel. The reason I say this is because many people point out that there are a lot of contradictions between the events that are told in Sefer Devarim to the way they are told in the other Chumashim. One of the examples from last week was the Meraglim, the famous story of the spies. The way it was told to us last week has a lot of differences, the way Moshe described it last week, to the way it's described to us in Sefer Bamidbar. I imagine that some of you are aware of this. Many people focus on this and discuss the differences between the stories, between the narratives of the different Chumashim. One of the ways to explain these differences is to do what I just said now, is to understand that Moshe is trying to take out of the historical event that he's describing certain truths that he wants to give over to the people, specifically at this given time as they are about to enter Eretz Yisrael. The messages of these events and what they mean to us as we live in Eretz Yisrael and establish a society in the land of Israel is what Moshe is interested in. So after that introduction, let's see how that works when it comes to this week's parsha. In this week's parsha, Moshe describes the giving of the Torah, Ma'amad Har Sinai. There is a repetition in this week's parsha of the Ten Commandments, as we know it from Sefer Shmot, Parashat Yitro. And thankfully, it is the same Ten Commandments that are repeated here as they are mentioned in Sefer Yitro. And basically, there is no real contradiction between the commandments themselves. However, there are some differences, which I'm not going to go into right now, But everyone points out that the main difference between the Ten Commandments as they were given in Shemot to Sefer Dvarim is the mitzvah of Shabbat, or in other words, the reasons for why we keep Shabbat. In a sheet of source sheet that I sent out, thank you very much. I shared with you a table which compares the details and the explanation for Shabbat as it is mentioned in Sefer Shemot to the way it is mentioned in Sefer Devarim. And you will notice, and I'm going to, with your permission, I'm going to share the screen. One second. There we go. I hope you can see it on the sheet, on the screen. You will see that, as people are aware, in Sefer Shemot, the verb is zachar, remember the Shabbat, while in Sefer Dvarim it's shamor, keep the Shabbat. Mefarshim explained that the main difference is between the mitzvah of zachor and shemot comes to include the positive mitzvot, how we remember the Shabbat in a positive way, for example, kiddush, while shamor in Sefer Dvarim comes to include what we should not be doing on Shabbat, the lo ta'aseh, the prohibitions of Shabbat, including the 39 melachot of Shabbat. Of course, the question is, wait a second. So what was the real Ten Commandments? Was it Zachor or was it Shamor? What was the actual original Ten Commandments? If I'm not mistaken, there's actually a suggestion that they were both written on the Ten Commandments. But Chazal, our rabbis, answer this with a very famous quote that we all mention in our Chadudi, Zachor v'shamor midibur echad, as if God spoke both words in one word. I would like to try to go back to that later on to understand what is the meaning of this expression, Zachor v'shamor midibur echad. They were sent in one sentence, in one word. But let's go back to the differences between the mitzvah of Shabbat. You will see that when it comes to the second, in the box here in the table, Shishitim Ta'avod, Mestikum Lachtecha is exactly the same. And then in the third box, we notice that it starts the same. Yom Hashvi Shabbat LaHashem Elokecha Lo Ta'aseh Melacha Ata Uvincha Uvitecha Avdecha Va'amatecha Uvehemtecha. That's quite similarly the gercha shebisharecha. What's missing here is the last line. Leman yanuach avdecha v'amatcha kamocha. The reason in Sefer Dvarim for the Shmirah of Shabbat, lema'an, well, I'm not sure if it's really a reason or rather a emphasis that it's important for your slave and your maid to rest just like you would. But the main difference is, of course, at the end. While in Sefer Shemot, God explains to us that the reason for Shmirat Shabbat, for keeping the Shabbat, is creation of the world. Ki sheshet yamim asa Hashem et hashamayim ve'et ha'aretz vayanech b'mashmi. God created the world in 6 days and rested the seventh, and therefore God made us, well, we'll get back in a second, God told us to rest on the seventh day. While in Sefer Devarim, in our parsha, this week's parsha, it actually puts the emphasis on Yitziat Mitzrayim. Remember, B'zacharta, you were a slave in Egypt, and God took you out of Egypt, and therefore we keep the Shabbat. Now, before we explain the difference between these two reasons, I want you please to notice that at the end of the pasuk in Sefer Shemot, it says, "Al kein beirach Hashem et yom haShabbat." God blessed the Shabbat. While in Sefer Dvarim, notice, "Al kein sivcha Hashem lokecha for the Shabbat." It seems that in Sefer Shemot, the main difference is the reason, creation, but also that God made Shabbat kadosh. While in Sefer Dvarim, the initiative of making Shabbat Kadosh is also in our hands. We must make the Shabbat. Chazal spoke about how Shabbat is Kvua V'Kaima, which means Shabbat is a God-made entity. It was made by God. Its sanctity is made by God. If a person goes to sleep Friday afternoon and wakes up Shabbat, Shabbat came in without any human interference. However, in Sefer Devarim, it seems that man has to be involved in making the Shabbat. Perhaps, and this is not my topic right now, that we see that this might be the reason for Kiddush. When we make Kiddush Friday night, we are also as if participating in making Shabbat Kadosh. We are differentiating Shabbat, separating it from the rest of the week by making Kiddush, perhaps parallel to what God does. God separated Shabbat from the rest of the week, and so we must. But according to these psukim, I hope you can see that this might be part of the idea of Sefer Devarim. But let's go back to the main difference. As I said, the main difference being the reason for Shabbat. Is the reason of Shabbat to remind us of God's creation? And we every time we keep Shabbat, we remind ourselves of how God created the world and remains in this world and somehow runs this world. And every Shabbat is a reminder for that. Or it is for Yitziat Mitzrayim. And it teaches us that we must be kind to our slaves and to our maids, because just like we were slaves in Egypt and we were freed, we must value freedom and share it with others. Let's go back to what I said before. Shamor, Zachor v'Shamor b'dibur echad. What is the meaning of such an idea based upon what we just said now? Perhaps, and this is probably the most simple meaning, it is telling us, not exactly, I don't think Chazal was so disturbed by how God said this. Rather, Chazal are teaching us that the same God who created the world and made us, created us, he is the God that is telling us to be kind and have mercy towards the ger, the yatom, the almana, and in this case, the eved and the shifcha. God is telling us your responsibility to be kind and merciful to others stems from God, the creator of the world. Perhaps that is the meaning of what Chazal is saying, Zachor v'Shamor, are connected. They're actually one. However, I would like to try to explain a little bit deeper than this, what the meaning of two reasons for Shabbat are. And I would like to explain that there is a certain tension going on here between both the Ten Commandments, a tension that exists throughout our religion. And I'll explain. The tension I'm talking about is the tension of the two most important historical events in the history of the world. On one hand, creation of the world. On the other, Yitziat Mitzrayim and Matan Torah. These two events, let's call them Sefer Bereshit versus Sefer Shmot. These two historical events are religious events with religious meanings, with religious ramifications, and I believe that these two historical events are in the foundation of our religion, and they keep us always in a tense kind of situation of which is the more important one and which one do we really celebrate in our religious life. And I'll explain what I mean. Hopefully I'll give you a few examples and explain to you what I mean. I will start with Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in Sefer HaKuzari. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, the great philosopher and the great poet, wrote a book called Sefer Kuzari, in which he tries to explain the logic of Judaism. And he does this by beginning a discussion between a king of Kuzar, who's not a non-Jew, who's looking to convert to another religion. And his interest takes him first to a Christian, then to a Muslim, And finally, to a Jew, the Chaver, Rabbi Dalevi himself, who will explain Judaism throughout the book. What's interesting is the following thing. In the beginning of the conversation with the Christian, the Muslim, and the Jew, the Chaver asks all of them one question, which is the same question. I'm going to change the question to make it a little bit more interesting to our days. I believe the question that he asks them is the following. How would you describe God's business card if God had a business card? What would be written on God's business card if he would give you a card? The Christian says, oh, very simple. G-O-D, creator of the world. Mitzuyan. I believe in the Bible, says the Christian. I believe in Revelation. I believe in what happened in Sefer Bereshit. Mitzuyan. Then he goes to the Muslim. And he says, Muslim, what is God's business card according to you? And the Muslim says, exactly the same. G-O-D, creator of the world. Then he comes to the Jew. And he asks the Jew for God's business card. And the Jew, of course, has to be different than the Christian, the Muslim. And by the way, if you read the Kuzari, you will see that this is the point where he loses his, he gets angry at the Chaver, at the Jew, because the Jew answers, God's business card, according to my belief, is G-O-D, the Redeemer of Egypt. Yitzhak Mitzrayim. And the king of Kuzar gets upset, and it's very understandable why he gets upset. Because the king of Kuzar is looking for a religion. He's not Jewish. So the Christian and Muslim, they can accept him because creation of the world talks to everyone. It's a universal message. While Yitzhak Mitzrayim is a religious message only to the Jewish people. So by saying right away that God is my God, and God relates to me, you are basically shutting me off as if from the universal God. Lo stam, it's not a coincidence. Our rabbis tell us that at Har Sinai, the word Sinai, Chazal play with, when the Torah was given at Mount Sinai, Sinai sounds like Sina, hatred. Anti-Semitism begins, according to the rabbis, there's a midrash like this, at Har Sinai. The moment that God, as if, chose us, that's when everyone gets upset. Why not me? What about us? Now, according to the Kuzari, and this is a very fundamental principle in the book of the Kuzari and Rabbi Yehuda Halevi's philosophy, the more important event in Jewish history, the event which has religious ramifications to us till today, is Yitzhak Mitzrayim and not creation of the world. In fact, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi argued with the Ibn Ezra. The Ibn Ezra, the great commentator on Chumash in Parashat Yitro, tells us that he and his friend Rabbi Yehuda Halevi had an argument about this. It says in the Sirta Dibrot, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am God who took you out of Egypt. Says the Ibn Ezra, why didn't God say, I am God who created the earth and heaven? Why did God describe himself in a certain type, in the Ten Commandments as the Yitzhak Mitzrayim and not the God of creation? So Ibn Ezra says, you know why? Because most people can't relate to a God of creation. The laws of physics and geography and these are very difficult understandings. That God it appears in creation and nature, that is so hard to understand. But when God comes and reveals himself to us and says, hi, I'm here, look at me, hear my voice, that everyone understands. Says Ibn Ezra, most people are stupid. That's what he says. Most people can't relate to the God of creation. But really, it would be better off for us to relate to the God of creation than the God of revelation. Rabbi Dalevi, however, he says, and he writes in his parish, and it's wonderful, because it's really wonderful how this is exactly what Rabbi Dalevi is saying in the book of Kuzari. He said, my good friend Yehuda Halevi argued that if he had to choose between them, The revelation is much greater. The God of Egypt is the God in which we should relate to, because we saw him, we heard him. That is the preferable way of how we meet with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. So when God said, I am the God who took you out of Egypt, it's not because it was second best way of describing himself, because that is the best way in which man can relate to God. When God reveals himself, when God comes down to us, when God talks to us, that is the preferable way of how to understand God. Now, by the way, it's interesting because the Rambam, Maimonides, will for sure, I believe, take the side of Ibn Ezra. When the Rambam discusses what is the way to understand God, to relate to God, to believe in God, Maimonides says, learn about the world of nature, learn about creation, learn physics, learn chemistry, learn biology, see the wonders of this universe. If you do that, you will grasp and understand God. Rabbi Levi would disagree. Rabbi Levi would say, no, the preferable way to understand God is when God talks to you, when he reveals himself to you in the Ten Commandments, in Yetziat Mitzrayim. That is the preferable way, the ideal way for man to meet God. So this is a machloket, this is a dispute, an argument between two great Jewish philosophers of how to relate to God. And I believe that what I said before is true. These two historical events have a tension between them. It's Briat HaOlam, creation of the world, Yetziat Mitzrayim. Which one is more important? Which one has more religious meanings? Now let's go back to our parsha. We said that in this week's parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu focuses on Yetziat Mitzrayim, while in Sefer Shmot, he focuses on creation. What do we do today? How do we really act? What's the halacha? What's the psak? Is Shabbat nowadays Zecher Yetziat Mitzrayim or Zecher Le Maaseh Bereishit? So if we were in a classroom right now, I would love to ask people for their opinion, but unfortunately not. And I'll just say that there is quite a clear distinction between the night of Shabbat and Shabbat morning. Shabbat, it's as if we say both opinions are correct. We'll accept both Ten Commandments, both Sefer Shmot and Sefer Dvarim. Friday night, we focus on Zeicher L'Maaseh Bereishit. We remind ourselves about creation. While Shabbat morning, we focus more, Yismichu B'malcha Shemar Yisrael Kohen, Yismach Moshe B'matnat Chelko. We spoke about Moshe, Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Now, I don't know what your nusach is. The people in front of me that are at the shir today, what your nusach is, Ashkenaz, Sfard. But Nusach Sfard Shabbat morning says Yismichu B'malchutcha. And how does that end? How does Yismichu B'malchutcha end? Shabbos morning, anyone? I would really appreciate someone yelling out.
Not really. Nobody.
So you should know that in my nusach, I dava nusach Ari. In the nusach Ari, I dava nusach Chabad, because my father did. Did you know that, Jay?
Well, this is the first I hear of that. That's very. Your father dava nusach Ari?
Yes, so did my
grandfather. When he was in Or Chaim? Like,
yes.
That he never, we never knew that.
Always. And my grandfather did, my great grandfather did. So if you look at Nusach Ari, you will see that Zeicher L'Maaseh Bereishit is omitted in Shabbos morning davening. It's not there. It's cut out. And that would explain what we just said now. Friday night is dedicated to Maaseh Bereishit. Shabbos morning is dedicated to Yetziat Mitzrayim. So we have the tension between these two historical events, and we as if compromise and say both are correct, and we bring them together on Shabbat. I still have to go back, though. Why did Moshe and Sefer Dvarim choose one and not the other? We'll get back to that, hopefully. But I want to show, I want to prove that this tension is consistent throughout our religion, and I'll explain. what are the ramifications, the religious ramifications between creation of the world to Yetziat Mitzrayim? What are the differences? One very simple difference is that the God of creation is a God of nature. We mentioned that. The God that works through the normal world as we know it. The world of laws and order, the world of nature. While the God of Yetziat Mitzrayim is a different revelation of God. It's God who performs miracles. Another difference between them is the God of creation, we don't know necessarily how he intervenes and interferes in this world. In other words, where is God after creation? Where do I find him? What is the meaning of God's existence in a world of nature? While in the God of Yetziat Mitzrayim, God knows my name. God knows who I am. I have a conversation with him. I'll say even more. God cares about us. In the God of creation, there's no indication that God knows who I am. And there's no indication that God even cares of what goes on down here. But the God of Yetziat Mitzrayim is a God that when he sees cruelty, evil, he interferes, he intervenes, he cares. And more important, it's a personal God that knows me, knows you, knows us. The outcome of that, of course, is that the God of Bereshit, the God of creation, is not a personal God. While the God of Sefer Shemot is a God who's personal, who I can meet with, I can talk to. However, I think it's the following difference, which is the greatest of all, which has huge ramifications on the way we live our lives. The God of creation, I hope everyone understands that I believe there's one God, right? I hope that when I say the God of creation versus the God of Yetziat Mitzrayim, I believe there's one God. I'm being taped, I have to be very careful. It's the way God reveals himself to us, through creation or through Yetziat Mitzrayim. The main difference between both revelations of God is, going back to what I said before, the God of Sefer Bereshit is a universal God. He's the God of all mankind. All people that exist in this world were created B'Tselem Elohim. The God that appears in Sefer Shemot is the God that is unique as if to the Jewish people. I would like to argue that this is a tension that exists in Jewish tradition, not only on Shabbat, but in Tefillah, in Yamim Tovim, and throughout our life. I'll give you a few examples. How do we daven in the morning when we say Berachot Kriyat Shema? We start with Yotzer HaMe'orot, the bracha on the sun, on the moon, on the universe. We describe, before we get to Shema, we have two brachot. The first bracha focuses on the universe, God, creator of the universe. And what's the second bracha before Shema? HaBocher Be'amo Yisrael Bi'ahava. Here also, we say, who am I? I am first part, a person who is God's creature, part of the universe, and then, and also, someone who God chose and took me out of Egypt. This also comes up in benching. How do we bench? The first bracha of benching begins, Baruch Ata Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Hazan Et Haolam Kulo Betuvo. We describe God's greatness as creator of the world. And me and I, we are just part of that universe, of that world. Then the second bracha, we say, Nodeh lecha Hashem Elokeinu asher tzeitanu me'eretz Mitzrayim. We describe how Am Yisrael were chosen. Again, we focus both in our davenings and our benching. We focus on the two steps of our identity. We are part of the world and we are Jews. You know, I'm in B'nai Akiva camp right now. There's a famous four-corner game they play in youth movements, right? When you want to challenge people to try to understand their identity. So you put in each corner different descriptions of identity. So in this case, I would do, what are you? Are you, we used to do like, are you an American Jew, a Jewish American or Canadian? Sorry, everyone. A Jewish Canadian, a Canadian Jew, Canadian, a Jew, right? Where would you go to? So here also, how do you describe yourself? Are you a Jew, a person, a Jewish person, right? So as if in the tefillah and in the Shema and in the benching, we mention these ideas. Let's take this further. When Am Yisrael were commanded to build a Mishkan in Sefer Shemot, we find that there are many expressions in the description of building the Mishkan that take us back to creation. Vayichal Moshe, vayichulu hashamayim ve'aretz. And I advise you, if you have any time to do this, I see Debbie is nodding her head. Nechama Leibovich has a wonderful, wonderful article about how she compares creation of the world to the building of the Mishkan. And the words, phrases that are repeated in both. But the reason for this is very simple, because we are commanded to build a house for God, just the same way God built us the house by creating the world. However, the Ramban teaches us that the meaning of the building a temple for God takes us back to Matan Torah. The Ramban tells us that when Moshe comes down from Har Sinai with the commandments, with the Torah, there is a cloud on him, on top of him, and God speaks through the cloud to the Torah. Says the Ramban, says Nachmanides, this is a one-time event. This can't be repeated all the time. So what do we do? So what do we do? What we do is, sorry. What we do is, we build a temple which commemorates this event. What is the temple? What is the Mishkan? The Mishkan has, when God comes down and speaks to Moshe, he comes down on a cloud. And what's in the Mishkan? The Luchot, the Ten Commandments, just like they were in at Har Sinai. Now, this is tremendous. Why? Because we basically have a machloket, as if a dispute again, which historical event is the Mishkan built for? Is it built for creation of the world or for Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Which is the more important event? I would like to suggest, and it's not my suggestion, that we have a compromise. The Mishkan is a zecher for Matan Torah, is a remembrance for the giving of the Torah and leaving Egypt. While the Migdash, the temple in Yerushalayim, is a house that takes us back to creation. And I'll explain how I see that. In order to do that, though, I have to go and explain how this idea is also in the holidays. The Jewish holidays have two sets of 1 week holidays, 7 days, Pesach and Sukkot, which are exactly a half a year apart, and both celebrate Yitzhak Mitzrayim. However, we know that the 7 days of Sukkot are part of Yamim Noraim. They start from Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and they go into Sukkot. And we know that the theme of the seventh month of the year, Tishrei, is creation of the world, the beginning of the world. In fact, our rabbis argue, was the world created in Tishrei or Nisan? Maybe they're arguing our argument. Maybe they're arguing what is the more important point to begin the Jewish year. Is it from creation or is it from Yitzhak Mitzrayim? Nevertheless, there's no doubt that the theme of Sukkot is very different than the theme of Pesach. While Pesach is our national holiday in which God took us out of Egypt, on Sukkot, there is a focus on a universal message. During Sukkot, we are commanded to bring 70 bulls to the Beit Mikdash. Why 70, say Chazal? Not bulls, parim. Yeah, I think bulls. Why 70, say Chazal? Because 70 is a code for the number of nations of the world. During Sukkot, we read from the prophet Zechariah and others who mention that in the future, all the nations of the world are going to come to the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim on Chag Sukkot. Because the Beit HaMikdash is not a house only for the Jewish people, but rather it's a house of God for all people in the world. Ki beiti beit tefila yikarei lechol ha'amim. This idea is also mentioned by Shlomo HaMelech, who when he dedicates the Mikdash, mentions that this will be the house for all nations. Now, ready for this? When is the Mishkan dedicated? What month?
Pesach. The beginning of Nisan.
I don't know if he froze. He looks a little frozen, Rav Aviad. Rabbi?
Am I back now?
You're back. You just asked the question, when was the Mishkan dedicated? And you got your answer in Nisan. And now you're going to ask, when was the Mikdash dedicated? And you'll get your answer, please, somebody.
The Mikdash was dedicated on?
Sukkot.
Sukkot.
So you see that perhaps the tension, again, between these two historical events and their religious meaning is also celebrated through the Mishkan versus the Mikdash. The tension is here too, and the tension exists within the Jewish holidays. While Chag Sukkot, and I would say Rosh Hashanah and Sukkot, are days which celebrate the universal message of Judaism, Pesach celebrates the national message of Judaism. It's not a coincidence that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is considered to be the father of Jewish nationalism, focusing on the message from Matan Torah and Yetzias Mitzrayim, while others focus on Briat Shemayim V'aretz. When Rabbi Sachs was Nifter, I had the opportunity, the zchut, to deliver some hespedim for him. I had a bit of a connection to him. When I was living in England, I was a rabbi in England for 2 years. And I described Rabbi Sachs as the Rav of Chag Sukkot. I felt that Rabbi Sachs if Rabbi Halevi would be identified with Pesach, I think Rabbi Sachs was identified with Chag Sukkot, which brings me to the following machloket between Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Huttner. Rav Lichtenstein, the Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, had three major Rabbanim that had a huge impact on him. It was Rav Soloveitchik, his father-in-law, Rabbi Soloveitchik's younger brother, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, and Rav Yitzchak Huttner, the great Hoge De'ot, Tamid Chacham. Rav Huttner was a, I don't know if you would call him a philosopher, but how would you define him, Jay, Rabbi Kelman? He was a man of deep thought.
A father, Rosh Hashanah, yeah, he's very into thinking and thought. And of course, he in his earlier years was a close student of Rav Kook. In his later years, he sort of moved away very much from that. But he was the thinker, Pachad Yitzchak, you know. Okay.
By the way, it's important to remember that his books, Pachad Yitzchak, were mostly written by his daughter. But that's an interesting fact. Anyway, Rav Huttner had a huge impact on Rav Lichtenstein. And in one of Rav Lichtenstein's article, he says, with all due respect, this what we're talking about right now is a matter of dispute between me and my Rebbe. My Rebbe Rav Hubner, he says, believed that once the Torah was given, then all the identity of universal messages of Sefer Bereshit are not important anymore. All what was given at Har Sinai destroys, annuls, knocks out all the messages as if that were given throughout Sefer Bereshit. While Rav Lichtenstein says, I disagree. I believe that the messages of Sefer Bereshit, the universal messages that we receive throughout Sefer Bereshit, especially in the first chapters of Sefer Bereshit, are important today to our Jewish identity. In fact, Rabbi Soloveitchik wrote a lot of this philosophy based on the first chapters of Sefer Bereshit, that he recognized that the religious responsibilities that we have do not stem only from Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but stem from creation of God putting man in Gan Eden and giving man a task to create, to work, to develop this world, to have children. These are religious messages that have meaning to us even nowadays. In other words, Rav Lichtenstein would sign off on Brachot Kriyat Shema, starting from Yotzer Maorot, on benching, starting from Matan Et HaKol. And I believe that this machloket says so much about the nowadays machloket that we have today between people who describe themselves as modern religious Jews to people who describe themselves as Haredi Jews. This, I think, is one of the fundamental principles of dispute. How I relate to myself as a Jew, part of the world, I start my story from Sefer Bereshit, or do I start myself from Yitzhak Mitzrayim? And I believe that this is a very, very important machloket. The tension between both exists all the time. We live it through the Chagim, we live it through the Shabbatot, as we said, we live it through the Kum HaMikdash, but we live it more, I would say, in our daily lives. How we understand the job and the role that we Jews have in this world. Do we understand that we are our history begins from Bereshit or from Shmot? In fact, one could argue that this is the deep meaning of Rashi's first question in Sefer Bereshit. Rashi begins the Chumash by asking this question: why does the Torah begin, he says, with creation and not at Yitzhak Mitzrayim? I know he doesn't say it exactly that way, but he basically, the first question of Rashi is hinting towards the tension between both stories. Now let's go back to this week's Parsha. This week's Parsha, Parshat Beit Hanan, as we said, explains Shabbat differently than Sefer Shmot. Sefer Dvarim explains that the Shabbat, the meaning of Shabbat, is about Yitzhak Mitzrayim and not creation. Why? Why does Moshe do that? The answer is quite simple. As we are about to enter the land of Israel, Moshe is interested to ensure that when we build a country, a state, we build it based upon social justice, tzedakah, chesed u'mishpat, that in this society that we build, we ensure that the weak, the people who usually don't have rights, who don't have a voice, would be given rights, will be given a voice. The ger, the yatom, the almana, the eved, and the shivcha. And that can be understood better after Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Remember, you were a slave in Egypt. You were once that person who had no voice and had no rights, and you received your freedom. You owe it to others, and you must ensure that the community and society that you build as you enter Israel will be built upon these principles of justice. So it is true that Shabbat have two different reasons, Briat Shemayim Va'aretz and Yitzhak Mitzrayim, but Moshe chooses to focus on one, not the other, because Moshe has a reason, has a narrative, has an agenda, which he wants to share with the Jewish people as they're about to enter the land of Israel. It doesn't mean that it's one, not the other. They're both true. The question is, what to emphasize on, and what to emphasize and when to emphasize that reason. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is doing in this week's parsha. So if we sum it up, I try to prove that the two historical events, Briat HaOlam, creation of the world, and Yitzhak Mitzrayim, and leaving Egypt and Matan Torah, are two major historical events that our rabbis, our teachers, almost argue which has more religious meaning. The bottom line, they both have different meanings, and they are both celebrated throughout our Jewish traditions in the Shabbat, in the Chagim, and in the Mikdash. Tudah Rabba, and thank you very much. And if there are any comments or questions, I would love to hear.
Anybody?
Yeah, I want to say that I think it's interesting that the creation of man was accompanied by a mitzvah. So is that an anticipation of does that link the two narratives? Is that an anticipation of Matan Torah in the creation narrative itself? The fact that that it was all dependent on a mitzvah, and violation of this mitzvah led to Ayeka, which is, of course, Echa, before the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash.
Oh, that's already, you're already going to very another level of depth there, which I didn't mean to go into, but interesting. Thank you. I something to think about. Okay. Thank you for mentioning that. Someone, iPad Toronto, has their hand up.
Okay. I have a question, very speculative. You have your Shamor, you have your Zachor. You have 40 years of teaching in the desert. Moses mentions one of them as part of his farewell speech. You have 600,000 men who supposedly been educated in the desert for all that time. Nobody picked up the stira and asked about it. Were Moses and Aaron before him good teachers? Or does this indicate that they were bad teachers, or that the children of Israel were bad learners? I mean, nobody says, you just taught us it was one word. Now you're teaching us it's another word. Which is it? And then you would have had the opening for Moses to say in the Torah, you know what, guys? There's a Torah Sheba'al Peh. In the Torah, it would be nice to know that there's 613 mitzvot, rather than Rabbi Simlai's speculation and mental gymnastics, and that there's a Torah Sheba'al Peh. But it's not in the Torah as a check figure or as knowledge given to us openly. Bad teachers, bad students, or both?
Okay, that you're going to a whole nother discussion. Thank you for that. I think it deserves a longer response than I can give right now. If we go back to Chazal, right? Zachor v'shmor b'dibur echad. And I don't know if that's really what I would understand normally, but they had a Masorah that both were given at Har Sinai. And again, the complexity of the complex message that both are true. But the question is, what do I focus on is a message that people can understand. Sometimes it's important to mention the Zachor, and sometimes the Shamor. They were both given at Har Sinai, according to this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted us to hear both. And as if they were given to us already then in a tradition, and people knew that they were both given then. Why does Moshe mention one, not the other? Because Moshe has an interest to focus on on one aspect, not the second, not the other one. That's what I can come up with. Again, if they have the tradition that both were given, then the question is a bit easier. The answer is a bit easier. But it's an interesting question what you said. Some people, like I said, some people said that, I think Rasag, Rabbi Sadia Gaon says that Moshe came down with both the Luchot, one said Zachar and one said Shamor. That it was written, Zachar and Shamor were written on the Luchot, both. That may be an interesting answer to your question.
Rabbi, anybody else? No. It's interesting. You said at the end that Moshe wants to focus on the social justice, one good Israel. Of course, that's a very important theme. But it's interesting. But he still is talking on Yetziat Mitzrayim. In other words, the Aseret that he brought in Beth Hanan is sort of the more unique Jewish idea. You could say, I understand because we're going into Eretz Yisrael, so therefore it's a very Jewish thing, and therefore the social justice thing is added in to. Don't just be nationalistic, have a more universalistic approach. I assume that's what you wanted to get across.
Also, yeah, I mean, that already you can.
In other words, why, I mean, to me, the simple reason is in Yitro, he's talking to the people who left Egypt. He doesn't have to tell us to keep Shabbos because we left Egypt. That they know. But they don't know about creation. They need to know about creation. The Jews in the desert, they got the man from heaven, the water from a rock. So they understood that there's a God, but they didn't experience Egypt. So they had to be taught Egypt. In other words, that's why historically you would divide
it. That could be, yeah.
Sorry? Yeah. Okay.
Ms. Seder.
Anybody other questions? Otherwise, we'll say thank you very much. Very interesting. I think it's a very important theme. That's the tenth. Basically, you developed Rav Soloveitchik's theme in a very beautiful way. Ger v'toshav anochi makam. That Avram says that, I'm a ger and a toshav, a Jew lives both as, you know, in a very different way you developed it, but the same idea. Really very, very, very beautiful. Go get a cup of tea and coffee and rest your voice and, say hi to Elnathan, my son's a counselor in Capstone, and whatever. Enjoy the rest of Color War and have a safe trip back. And okay, always a pleasure.
Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. Tomorrow, of course, my shiur continuing on the Amidah at 9:15, and everybody's welcome. And Sunday morning, Rabbi Liebtag at 11:15, and Benny Gesundheit Bivrit B'Shachad Achar HaTzoraim. And okay, we look forward to learning with you and everybody. We all Shabbat Shalom and share good news. Thank you, Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.
Laila Tov.